Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't yes, you know we did.
We
started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful, beautiful Gar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, our Solartopia Green Power and Wellness theme song from the Grammy-winning album Tomorrow's Children by the Rivertown Kids on Appleseed Records. We have one of our great guests today. I'm truly honored, as always, to have Helen Caldicott with us, talking via Skype from Australia. We will take a short break at the 30-minute mark, but Helen will be with us for the full hour. We have so much to talk about. Helen, are you there?
I am, Harvey. I have to end 5 minutes before the hour, if that's okay.
That's fine. We will be able to fill it up, I'm sure, with many great seeds of wisdom. But you have been on, you've been on this show before, and I've been on your show before. And you are just a global treasure for all the incredible work you've done. And I want to start just with talking about the upcoming conference you have in New York City. This you have had conferences before. This one, if you'll give us the date and place, and tell us what is the major attraction for this upcoming conference you can do in the Bay.
Well, it's on February the 28th and March the 1st, a weekend. It's to be held at the New York Academy of Medicine, and the title is The Dynamics of Possible Nuclear Extinction. Now, that sounds pretty grim, but it is grim. We're in a very difficult position now with the Ukraine, with Russia and America confronting each other militarily and really militarily for the first time. Since the end of the Cold War, Russia's been conducting nuclear drills, so I'm sure has America. And things are very tenuous, but the major media in America is pushing Putin and pushing Russia into a corner. And it's terribly, terribly dangerous because America has over 1,000 hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert to be launched in 3 minutes by the president, and the same in Russia. And no one talks about it. We're sort of like lemmings walking towards the cliff of nuclear extinction.
All those years of driving us crazy about those dangerous Soviets, and this whole idea that communism was the issue, it was never the issue. It was always just a global superpower face-off. And now Putin, who is about the last thing on earth away from a communist, is being used as an excuse for the new Cold War. What really terrifies me, Helen, about Ukraine, in addition to all the nuclear weapons that the two sides have, is the nuclear power plants that are still operating in Ukraine. I mean, what is happening with them?
Well, you're right, Harvey. I mean, there are 15 very large nuclear reactors in the Ukraine, including Chernobyl. And that's still a bit tenuous, but parts of the Ukraine are terribly highly contaminated. The incidence of cancer in those areas is very high, particularly in children, and many other diseases too related to the radiation. So it's a terribly dangerous situation. I've just read an article that the forces behind this that are pushing it are the military industrial complex in America and Brookings Institute and the Atlantic Council, and they're doing it to get money for themselves to build more weapons, because when the Cold War ended, the military industrial complex was at an impasse because they really didn't have to build any more weapons, truly. But, you know, so they've conjured up ways to build more weapons. Norman Augustine, who was the head of Lockheed Martin, which is the biggest weapons contractor in the world, travelled to all the little countries that were part of the Soviet Union bloc, the Eastern European countries, and persuaded them to join NATO. Now, to join NATO, you have to be militarily armed to the tune of billions of dollars, and you have to buy Lockheed Martin planes, etc. Well, that's what happened. And so all those former Soviet little countries, the Eastern Bloc, Lithuania and all the rest, have become part of NATO, and NATO really is America. And there's no need for NATO now because it was set up to confront the ex-Soviet Union. And when Gorbachev and Reagan signed an agreement, or maybe it was the first George Bush, to end the Cold War, America agreed it would not enlarge the NATO countries, and they've done exactly the opposite, right up to the border of Russia. Can you imagine how America would feel if Russia suddenly announced that Canada was part of the Russian bloc? Well, remember what happened in Cuba when they placed a few nuclear missiles in Cuba, the Russians did. America nearly blew up the world. We were 3 minutes from, I think, extinction, according to McNamara, who was a friend of mine. So it's extraordinary hypocrisy, it's arrogance beyond belief, and it's wickedness. It's absolute wickedness. So these characters can earn billions of dollars building their weapons of mass destruction.
It is, and it's terrifying. Who is actually taking care of these 15 reactors that are still operating in Ukraine? I mean, that's a lot of news.
Harvey, I don't know. I guess the old reactor operators are looking after them. But if there's a war, well, there is a war going on in the Ukraine, but if a missile hits one of the reactors, it could induce a meltdown. If there's a loss of external electricity supply, which supplies the pumps, which pump a million gallons of water a minute through the reactor to keep it cool, if they lose that electricity supply, then there'll be a meltdown. There are so many ways that those reactors could melt down. And no one's talking about that either, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, NPR. They're just ignoring it. And it feels very creepy to me, Harvey. And so I set up this symposium partly because of the Ukraine and partly because I read an article in the Atlantic Monthly months ago quoting Stephen Hawking and Max Tegmark, who are into artificial intelligence, and they said that they are extremely worried that within about a decade or so, computers will take over most functions that humans do, A. B, they will become autonomous, C, they probably will be able to reproduce themselves, and D, they could possibly start a nuclear war on their own. And I thought, oh my God. So therefore, I arranged this conference. I think Hawking may introduce it, and Max Tegmark from MIT will speak about this tremendously dangerous situation. And the people involved in artificial intelligence know it's dangerous, like Elon Musk, etc., but they can't stop themselves making this stuff. It's amazing.
Well, it is amazing. Tell us about the speakers at your conference. And what the terms are, where it is in New York City, what the times are, and who are the principal speakers?
Okay, I'll just wait a minute. I've got to find the list of speakers while on my computer. I won't be a second, and I'll download them.
Where was Helen Caldicott speaking to us from? Australia, of course, the great Helen Caldicott. I don't think she needs any introduction to my listeners. And she has a conference coming up in New York City the weekend after next, February 28th and March 1st. So tell us the details, Helen, if you would.
Okay. So it starts at 9 o'clock, the conference.
On Sunday? That's a Saturday morning.
Yes, yeah, a Saturday morning, which is all good. So everyone can come. Hopefully the big freeze will be over by then, because, you know, it's been terribly, terribly cold in New York and the East Coast. And it's going to be really quite an amazing event. And so I'm just downloading the speakers now. I apologize for my computer being a little slow.
Well, tell us about the keynoters. I'm sure you know who they are and a bit about them.
Well, Chomsky is going to speak.
Noam Chomsky from MIT. What's he going to speak about?
Well, he's going to speak about the pathology within the American political system which could induce a nuclear war. And also, there's another wonderful journalist called Robert Parry, who's writing about the fact that the New York Times is totally ignoring the true situation in the Ukraine, whereby America instigated a coup. So they got rid of the former president, Yanukovych, and they put in Poroshenko, who is an American puppet. Now, how often has America done that? I mean, it's been doing it forever.
What's the purpose of doing that? What's at stake in Ukraine?
It's sort of, the Ukraine's always been allied or part of Russia, so it's pushing Russia to the brink. They want the Ukraine to join NATO, and then America's just virtually taken over the whole of Europe that once belonged to Russia, and pushing Putin into a corner. And, you know, Putin's probably a little paranoid at this stage, and it's not medically indicated to threaten a paranoid patient, because they often will lash out and do something terribly dangerous. So we're in a very, very invidious position. And Putin's terribly popular in Russia. In fact, this whole Ukrainian situation has made him even more popular. The Russians are very patriotic and nationalistic simply because of what they went through in the Second World War. The Second World War was won on the Russian front, and they lost 20 to 30 million. And they're very strong about this. So here I have the list. Kenneth Benedict, who is the publisher and editor of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, will moderate the first day. Ted Postel, who's a former emeritus professor of science and technology at MIT, he is a brilliant man and will describe missile defense and how it won't work, and what a dangerous situation it is that America is going to upgrade its whole nuclear arsenal to the tune of $1 trillion in the next 30 years and make the nuclear weapons, quotes, unquotes, more accurate. And that will... You don't have to have a 20-megaton bomb with absolute accuracy, because it'll take out an area three-quarters of a mile wide and 800 feet deep, turning that into a huge cavern and kill everyone out to 3,000 square miles. Anyway, he'll be talking about that. Max Tegmark, he's a professor at MIT, talking about our mathematical universe, and we'll discuss artificial intelligence and the risk of accidental nuclear war. Hans Christensen from the Federation of American Scientists will discuss the world's nuclear arsenals. And America and Russia own 93% of the 16,400 H-bombs in the world today. So the only real terrorists in the world threatening us with extinction are Russia and America. Let's be frank. Greg Mello will talk about the role of the nuclear weapons labs with the nuclear armament dilemma. Robert Parry, I've talked about him. Bruce Gagnon, he talks about the militarization of space, which is ongoing. Bob Alvarez will talk about lateral proliferation as America sells nuclear reactors all around the world, and a nuclear reactor is a bomb factory, because you can make bombs from the plutonium the reactors manufacture, and that produces lateral proliferation, and that how that could trigger a global nuclear holocaust. Stephen Starr, a senior scientist, will go very carefully through what would happen if there was a nuclear war. His title is Nuclear War, an Unrecognized Mass Extinction Event Waiting to Happen. Holly Barker is an anthropologist, is going to speak about the dreadful medical, teratogenic and genetic pathology related to the US nuclear testing in the Marshall Islands, where they blew up huge hydrogen bombs and purposefully irradiated the Marshall Islanders. And the women have babies that are like jellyfish, grossly deformed. There's a huge cancer incidence. And America's just been treating them like guinea pigs, watching them and getting the data about people who've been exposed to radiation. Alan Robock, who is the main author of the articles about nuclear winter and what would happen if there was a nuclear war, and we would have a short nuclear winter and a short ice age and everyone would freeze to death in the dark, and he'll be speaking. Let's see. Susie Snyder, she comes from Holland, and she is part of Pax Christi, and they've done a wonderful report on the banks that are involved in funding nuclear weapons. The report is called Don't Bank on the Bomb. And so she will go through all our friendly banks which are funding our possible nuclear extinction. Hugh Gustafson is a professor of anthropology. He spent 1 year living at Los Alamos Labs, drinking beer with the workers at night who design nuclear weapons, going to their church, and analysing their motives for building nuclear weapons. That's going to be fascinating. Robert Shear is a journalist. He wrote a book called Star Warriors about the young men at Lawrence Livermore Labs who design the weapons. Many of them have Asperger's syndrome. They drink Coke and eat ice cream all day. They have no relationships with anyone else except their computer screen. And they're really...
In other words, they're typical Americans.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, so they're pathological. And what we don't do is analyze the people who run our planet and who make all these decisions, and many of them are sociopaths with no moral courage at all, no conscience, but they're very clever. Then we've got Noam Chomsky, and we all know about Noam. David Krieger, who will speak about the suit that the Marshall Islanders have now against America and all nuclear countries, because Article 6 of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which the nuclear nation signed, said that they would disarm as fast as possible, and they've done exactly the opposite. Then there's Tim Wright, who is the campaign director for the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, and they're doing some very good work. He's Australian. And then I'm going to talk. My title is While There's Life, There's Hope, or An Urgent Prescription for Survival. So it's going to be big. The other thing that we're doing, Harvey, is showing a film called On the Beach. It's old. It was made in Australia with Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner, and it's about a nuclear war that occurs by accident in the Northern Hemisphere and everyone dies. And the last people left alive in the world are people in Melbourne, which is so far south in Australia, which is where I lived as a child. And it's a very ordinary sort of scene, families coping with what might happen as the fallout comes out, the government dispensing cyanide capsules so people could kill their babies immediately without dying of acute radiation illness, vomiting and bleeding to death. It's very powerful, and I'm showing this film because we tend to stay in our left brains. Numbers of bombs, you know, numbers of dollars, the whole thing, without really feeling what this is about. So I'm hoping to get into people's guts, if you will, souls, to feel what we're actually talking about, and I think that film will do it.
I actually met the widow of Stanley Kramer, who made On the Beach. I met her at a party in Los Angeles a couple weeks ago, and she's still carrying on his work. Is she going to be there, or Mrs. Kramer?
Well, she was going to be there, and her daughter, Kat, but they can't make it. It was that film and that book which started me on my life's career, being worried as a physician about nuclear war. And I guess I read the book when I was about 15 or 16, and I lived in Melbourne. And I was never the same again. I mean, I just could not believe that we could wipe ourselves off the planet. And it's getting worse. And the thing is that all of us, or most of us, practice what's called psychic numbing. In order to survive psychologically, we block it out and pretend it's not happening. And we sort of do, excuse me, displacement activities. If you put rats in a cage and threaten them with a lethal situation, they tend to run away and do something totally irrelevant to that which threatens them, like gourmet foods, high fashion, are you fat or thin, all of this stuff, which is absolutely irrelevant. Manic denial, that's what we're into, and that's pathological. It's pathological. No one really addresses that either.
We're talking with Helen Caldicott, the great Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's on the phone with us from Australia. We're discussing the amazing conference that she has coming up in New York City, February 28th to March 1st. Where in the city is this conference, and what are the logistics? Is there a fee to get in, and what are the hours of the conference?
It's $60 for 2 days, which is cheap.
Yeah.
And it includes lunch. And it's at the New York Academy of Medicine, which is uptown on the east side. It's just near a big New York hospital, which I can't remember its name. But it's
okay.
Like at 114th Street and 5th or something like that. It's way uptown.
Okay. I'm sure that people in the studio in New York know where it is. Broadcast will be archived. There's been some issues with the server at PRM, but it won't be available at Podbean, and I will put the link at Facebook and elsewhere so that people can track this down and send it out on my various lists. We're with the great Helen Caldicott. Helen, this is a heck of a conference. Do you have a staff to put the conference together?
No. I've got one executive director. So my role as president of the Helen Caldicott Foundation for Nuclear Free World is to raise the money, and that was hard this time. It was like pulling teeth. I had to raise $175,000, which I finally did. I've got an executive director called Marley Lightfoot, and I recruit the speakers, and then she organizes them, their airfares, their accommodation, the New York Academy of Medicine, logistics, etc. She's marvelous, and she did the last one that we did on Fukushima a year ago at the New York Academy of Medicine. But this is going to be my last hurrah, I think. I'm nearly 77. I've covered most issues that I care about so deeply: depleted uranium weapons, nuclear power and global warming, war in space, nuclear war, nuclear reactors. Then I think I'll settle down and write a book, which will be my magnus opus, called Why Men Kill and Why Women Let Them. And then I might get into my garden. I'm not sure. But, I mean, how long can you go on flogging a dead horse, let's be frank? You know, I don't get any decent international media anymore, so I can't teach, which is the object of my exercise, teaching the medical consequences of global warming, nuclear power, and nuclear war. And that has to happen through the media. As Jefferson said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. I'm hoping to attract some major media, at least to cover the conference. There's been a lot of PR going out, but to date, only Pacifica has responded, and a major wire service in Japan, which is very good, but not yet the New York Times, nor the Washington Post, nor NPR, nor the television stations. So we'll see.
Well, I think the problem, Helen, is that you have not lined up Kim Kardashian for one of the...
well, maybe I could do a strip, Harvey.
Look, we're talking with Helen Caldicott. This conference sounds fantastic. It will be on the Upper East Side of New York on the two weekends, this coming weekend after next. And now you'll, I assume you'll podcast it. You'll make the archives available for each a seminar and put them out somehow on the internet.
Yes, look, Harvey, it's going to be live streamed. But don't let that put you off going, though, because it's very important to be there in person, particularly everyone listening in New York. It's a hop, skip, and a jump to the New York Academy of Medicine, which is a gorgeous building of marble and brass with a very long history of medical conferences. It's an august location, really, and it will be available online to get into after the conference, as is the Fukushima event. The Fukushima conference is now still being accessed by people online. A book was published of the proceedings called Crisis Without End. You can find that on Amazon or any bookshop, published by the New Press. And the New Press will publish a book from this conference too on the proceedings. I don't know what it will be called. So it will be available to people. But the main thing is that Mr. and Mrs. Joe Sixpack know nothing about this terribly important situation. And unless they do, the politicians don't care. They're all in the pockets of the military-industrial complex, which has cleverly put their factories in every single congressional district in America. And so the Congress people and senators vote for more and more weapons because it means more jobs. So it's kind of like building Hitler's gas ovens, because this will create the global gas oven. This will create the global gas oven. And they scream jobs. Well, you know, you don't have a job to destroy life on the planet and the creation. That's more than wicked. That's called evil. And so that's the situation we're in. Unless the ordinary people with their children and grandchildren understand the risk to their children and grandchildren and descendants, nothing will happen. But I speak from experience, because in the 80s, Harvey, we mobilized 80% of Americans to want to end the nuclear arms race. And in fact, we were successful. We brought the nuclear arms race to a halt. The Cold War ended. Reagan met Gorbachev. I met Reagan in the White House and talked to him for an hour and a quarter, and he became a man of peace in a way. So it's possible, but it's only possible through the media. As Marshall McLuhan said, the media is the message, and the media are strangely dissociated from this whole ghastly situation.
It is amazing. Helen, we're going to take a short break, give you a chance to get some water, let Dana Lyons sing the Solartopia Rocky Top version. We'll be back in about 3 minutes to continue with Helen Caldicott. And Helen, I want to talk to you about some domestic nuclear power issues while we have you, but we want to emphasize your conference. So we'll rejoin that discussion in about 3 minutes.
Thanks, Harvey.
New plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams, Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan, oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam, road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Home sweet home to me, Solartopia, that's the future for me, green powered energy, windmills, hydrogen, photovoltaic cells with solar panels everywhere, solar cars, fast trains, bicycles, hydroplanes, get you home in under an hour. Gardens, tidal geothermal power, family.
Yeah, there we go. Dana Lyons with the Solartopia Rocky Top version. We're on with Helen Caldicott, the truly great Helen Caldicott, talking about her conference upcoming in New York City at the New York School of Medicine and on the Upper East Side of Manhattan on the ongoing issues of nuclear war and survival of the human species on this planet. Helen's talking to us from Australia, and Helen, it must take so much energy and resources to put one of these things together. I'm just in awe of the program you've collected there, and of course the archive will be amazing. We'll have it on a book for the future, and we'll have it podcast. So, you know, the New York Times, all these other guys, they're just so far in some other netherworld, completely refusing to pay attention to this. It's very frustrating, but at least we do have, at least for the time being, the access to the Internet. I do want to shout out, you know, Barack Obama has been full of frustration and disappointment for all of us, but the apparent defense of net neutrality at this point in time really is a big deal, and I am grateful for that much. So we will be able to get the benefit of your conference at least through the Internet, and we'll look forward to that.
Good.
Yes, it is good. And this show will be on Podbean and archived once the good people at PRN. I want to shout out to Gary Nall and Jason and Casey and all the other great people at PRN for sticking with it. There was a system crash, not PRN's fault. Apparently it was with GoDaddy, but they have managed to maintain the archives, which is a great relief, and to still have the shows available at Podbean and elsewhere on the Internet. So, Helen, we have talked a bit about Ukraine and the ridiculous situation there. I mean, clearly it's an extension of American power into Europe. I have heard discussion also that one of the reasons for all this is that there's lots and lots of frackable gas in Ukraine. Have you heard that as well?
Yes, I've heard that, but I haven't investigated it too deeply, but I have heard that. I mean, you know, there's always motives behind anything that America does, and it's always money and taking over other people's resources. So I can't really talk about that at length, Harvey.
Yes, that's okay. But I do want to emphasize that there are 15, that's 1-5 atomic reactors, still, I guess, operable would be the right phrase, in Ukraine, and that really scares the heck out of me. We are in a situation in the United States now, Helen, just to switch the topic a little bit to our longtime pursuit of the shutdown of the nuclear power industry, where older reactors in the United States are being subsidized now by the states. I mean, we've gone from too cheap to meter to the point where all these rickety old claptrap reactors are being kept online with state subsidies. It's quite shocking. Have you followed that at all?
Not too closely, but you know, the nuclear power industry is a socialized industry. It's all, everything that occurs before the reactor is built, uranium mining, uranium milling, uranium enrichment, the production of the fuel rods, and then building the reactor, that's all, and the insurance to cover an accident is all covered by the federal government, most of it. And then a utility will buy the reactor or take over, having had none of those previous expenses, and they sell electricity to the tune of $1 million a day. So they need to keep the reactors operating for as long as they possibly can. So they're extending the time frame or the lifespan of reactors from 40 years to 60 and in some instances 80 years. Now, as a reactor operates, I'm sorry for my funny voice, as the reactor operates, it becomes embrittled as the neutrons hit metal, and the metal becomes very brittle and can crack, and therefore the pipes can crack, and the pipes transmit the water to keep the reactor cool, which means a meltdown could be induced by keeping these reactors open for longer. There's a situation called the bathtub curve, and it applies both to reactors and to human beings. When we're born in the first few months and years of life, we're vulnerable to infections and all sorts of other diseases. Then when we reach later childhood and middle age, we're pretty invulnerable to most diseases, unless you're very unlucky. And then as we get older, our pipes crack and break, we get arteriosclerosis, heart attacks, strokes. I'm in that end of the bathtub curve, and that's what happens to reactors. In fact, Chernobyl melted down in the first 3 months of its operation. So they're very vulnerable at startup, and they're very vulnerable when they get older. And therefore, they're being kept going longer and longer. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is really composed of people who are in the nuclear industry and want to make money by selling electricity to the tune of $1 million a day. Then you've got the nuclear waste problem, which has to be stored for 1 million years, according to the EPA. And you've got the transportation and storage of nuclear waste and the decommissioning of reactors. A large nuclear reactor, I think, as far as I know, has never been decommissioned because they're so radioactive you have to let them sit for, 50, 60 years, so they're not quite so radioactive, and then robots have to cut them apart. Are not taken into account at all, and I guess the poor old taxpayers will pay for it. So, in fact, if you look at it, it's a socialized industry. Socialism. Or you could call it communism, because that's what they actually promoted when they first developed communism before the madman Stalin took over. And so is the weapons industry, a socialized industry. So I read yesterday 68 cents of your discretionary taxes go to the military-industrial complex. In effect, America is a socialized country, and yet they call it capitalism. It's not.
Well, it's what it really is fascism. I mean, there's a very simple definition of fascism, which is corporate control of the state. And of course, people don't like to throw that word around because it conjures up memories of the Nazis, but the fact is that Mussolini invented the term fascism, had a very simple five-word definition, corporate control of the state, and that's what we really have in the United States now, especially with the floodgates open for the corporate money of the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and all these other...
Just wicked, wicked. I hear that Obama wants to veto Citizens United.
Well,
I don't know if he can.
No, it really will require is a constitutional amendment. And there is a group here called Move to Amend, which is a great group, and look it up online, all you folks out there. Move to Amend, which is promoting a constitutional amendment to get rid of Citizens United and this whole insane concept of corporate personhood. So hopefully that will move ahead. But we're in a very desperate situation. I mean, the influx of gargantuan sums of money into the electoral, our governmental process has just rendered our society the sort of the plaything of a small handful of multi-billionaires.
Yeah, it makes the people of America impotent.
Yes, I mean, you look at the Koch brothers, who have in the range of $40 billion, they've come forward and said they're going to spend almost $1 billion, but we know it'll be way more, to buy the 2016 election. And that's, that's barely even pocket change for them. So we really face a desperate situation. The Koch brothers are deeply invested in fossil fuels, and they are promoting fracking and the continuation of coal.
So they're promoting global warming. They're promoting, 6 degrees centigrade hotter by the end of the century. They're promoting no future for our children and the death of many species on Earth. They're promoting in a slow way. Is it with a whimper or a bang? And global warming is a whimper and nuclear war is a bang.
Right. And unfortunately, the commercial reactors in the United States, which are getting old as we speak, are really in an advanced stage of decrepitude. We had a show; they're being bailed out now by, you know, state governments, which have been purchased by the Koch brothers, especially Ohio, Illinois. There are five reactors. They're old reactors. They want to bail out in Illinois. There's the incredible and infamous Davis-Bessey here in Ohio. These reactors are worse than we even imagine them, and because they're so old and they're so badly run. So this is a very, very dangerous time. As you know, Helen, we have succeeded in the last 2 years in the United States in shutting five old reactors. And it's cause for great joy, but God, there's still 99 left in the U.S. There are about 300.
That's not joy. I don't think that's joy. You know, Harvey, I've been saying for years that unless there's a good big meltdown in America and hundreds of thousands of people die of acute radiation illness and cancer, nuclear power will continue and the nuclear arms race will continue. And that's a terrible thing for me to say. But let's be frank, Americans don't really care about Russians dying. They didn't during Chernobyl. The latest figures are over 1 million have died because of Chernobyl, not just in Belarus and the Ukraine and eastern Russia, but all over Europe. And I remember being on the ABC radio in Kansas airport or something when Chernobyl happened, and the announcer said to me, well, they're just Russians. And my breath was taken away. I said, I'm a doctor. All people are precious and sacred. Then, of course, Three Mile Island didn't seem to affect people, but in fact there are a lot of cancers that developed from that, and people lied, and the Kemeny Commission covered up a lot of the facts. And then with Fukushima, there's a big cover-up there, such that the Abe government has passed a law recently to say that anyone who reports on Fukushima, honestly, could be jailed for 10 years. The doctors have been told not to tell their patients the diseases could be related to radiation. Over 104 children now in Fukushima have developed thyroid cancer, many of them very aggressive cancers, and that's the tip of the iceberg. That indicates there will be hundreds of thousands of more cancers over time, because cancer takes from 2 to 80 years to manifest itself post-radiation. You can't taste, smell, or see radiation in your food. There are fish now getting to the west coast of America that are containing radiation from Fukushima. The federal government is not routinely testing the fish, nor is it testing the ambient air, nor the water. And there was an earthquake of 7 magnitude on the Richter scale yesterday, plus numerous smaller ones near Fukushima, which could seriously destabilize those three melted down reactors and could induce a huge release of radiation. So things are grim, but I don't think Americans care much about Japanese either. They care about themselves. You know, if one little girl goes down a well, that's national news until she's rescued. Well, that's good for the little girl, but we tend not to care about people overseas, just in our patriotism and nationalism about ourselves. And unless there's a catastrophe, I think, in the United States, things will remain the same. And I hate to say that, being a physician who's devoted my life to saving lives.
Well, but the problem is, of course, that God forbid there should be such an accident, the media will immediately gang up and say that there's no real harm.
No, they can't do that. They can't do that, Harvey. If people are radiated and they are radioactive, what do you do with them? Well, you know, the old FEMA organization said you take the irradiated people down into the mortuary and you hose them down, and the radiation goes down the plug hole. But you can't get radiation out of people's lungs or out of people's bodies. And people kind of know that. They're well enough educated to know that. And furthermore, if they suffer acute radiation illness, vomiting and bleeding, you know, they'll know that that's related to the meltdown, and there'll be terrible, terrible grief. And you can't evacuate from a nuclear power plant because the wind blows in all directions. You don't know where the wind's blowing or what would happen. Incidentally, Hillary Clinton signed an agreement with the Japanese government just after Fukushima that America would continue importing Japanese food. And you're allowed 1,200 becquerels per kilogram, whereas in Japan it's only 100 becquerels per kilogram in food. I went into a sushi restaurant the other day in New York, and I said to the chef, well, where did the fish come from? Japan. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
Well, of course. Right. That's what they're continuing to do. We're talking with Helen Caldicott, the great Dr. Helen Caldicott, talking to us from Australia. Helen, how is Australia doing with renewable energy? Is there a significant...
Well, you know, we've got a horrible government. It's almost worse than yours. We've got a just revolting Prime Minister called Tony Abbott. And he's... He called it a carbon tax, but it wasn't. It was corporations having to pay large amounts for any carbon emissions that they produced. He axed that. He ended it. He ended an organisation set up for renewable energy. He's just revolting. We are a country bathed in sun. We've got a lot of geothermal energy in South Australia, and we're blown by wind. And we could be the energy superpower, the renewable energy superpower of the world. But that funding's been cut. Now, hopefully, Tony Abbott will be cut soon too, because voters are disgusted with him, and maybe we'll get someone more sensible as Prime Minister. I don't know. But in the meantime, there's a group of really crazy people in South Australia, one Barry Brook, who is a professor of environmental research or something at the University of Adelaide, who's a huge promoter of nuclear power. Now, our anti-nuclear movement in Australia started in my sitting room in Adelaide, where I lived in 1971 or so, and we led the movement against French nuclear tests in the Pacific and against uranium mining in Australia, and Australia became ardently anti-nuclear. Well, now South Australia has huge resources of uranium, and Barry Brook et al. Are persuading the South Australian government to have a royal commission into uranium mining, uranium enrichment, building nuclear power plants, and possibly becoming the world's nuclear waste dump, which they say will make billions of dollars for South Australia. The whole thing's gone absolutely insane. Nuclear insanity. What can I do about it? Well, I don't get much press attention here, now. I used to once. I don't know what to do. And it's awful to say, but I'm feeling like, you know, washing my hands of the whole business. I don't know what next to do except to talk about the medical effects. That's all I can do.
Well, I think that between the medical effects and the astonishing race forward of renewable technologies, that we do have a chance. I mean, it does seem that the green power industry is coming on like gangbusters. The technology continues to break through. We're talking now a real game changer, which is Elon Musk and some others appear to be on the brink of major battery storage breakthroughs. And they're, you know, as Arnie Gundersen likes to say, the nuclear industry says we can store nuclear waste for 250,000 years, but we can't store electricity overnight. And
yeah, I know, that's a lovely quote.
Yeah, and I think that the realities of the onset of the electric car actually are going to have a huge impact on the ability of homes to be solar heated and to get their electricity from solar and to power automobiles.
Yes.
So it seems
every
like,
parking
know,
lot in America should be covered with solar panels. You plug the solar car into the panel, charge it up during the day when you're at work and drive home at night. And
absolutely.
Then plug it into your house and charge your house up at night. I mean, it's all there, and we should be doing it. And the people who get into it will make billions. What? Not that this is about money. It's about survival.
Right. And so, you know, it seems that just with this dark time that we do have technological possibilities that we haven't had before. Same with Germany. Germany really is making the transition, as you know, Helen, to a green-powered economy. They're shutting down their nuclear plants. So this is, you know, Austria, actually, I love this because of the intricacies of the EU. Austria is actually suing Great Britain about subsidies that David Cameron, another truly awful leader wants to give to build a nuclear plant at Hinkley in Great Britain. So, you know, our balancing developments. We do seem to have a string of really awful leaders in the old British Empire. Stephen Harper in Canada.
Yeah, he's dreadful.
Dreadful. And David Cameron in the home port there. And I don't know what's the person like in New Zealand these days?
He's moderate. Keyes, his name is. He's not nearly as good as David Longy, who stopped American nuclear ships coming into New Zealand harbours. He said, "We refuse to sit in the back stalls of the nuclear theatre."
Well, good for him. But at any rate, Helen, you know, I think that the we are in a position in the United States, I think, to stop new reactor construction. It was just announced that there are huge cost overruns and delays on the reactor in Georgia. Tremendous problems at the two in South Carolina. I don't think there'll be new nuclear plants built in the U.S., but the real challenge is to get these old ones shut down before they start to blow. I had a show last week about the Davis-Bessey reactor in Ohio, which is just a ridiculous pile of junk. So we're running out of time. Again, I want to give us the detail on your upcoming conference.
Okay.
My
upcoming symposium is called The Dynamics of Possible Nuclear Extinction. And that's not over-egging the situation, as we say in Australia. That's really reality. It's at the New York Academy of Medicine on February the 28th and March the 1st, which is over a weekend. I've got some fantastic speakers, and it's possible Stephen Hawking himself may introduce a symposium, Noam Chomsky speaking, and other people on artificial intelligence and accidental nuclear war and computers and hacking going awry and the medical consequences of what would happen should there be one, the Ukrainian situation and how volatile and terribly dangerous that is. Everyone is welcome at $60. Go to my website, HelenCaldicottFoundation.org, and register now. And lunch comes with a $60 registration on both days, so you get a lunch as well thrown in. It's going to be quite an event, and I'm also showing a film called On the Beach, which is an absolute classic, and it's made by Sandy Kramer. So please come if you possibly can. It will change your life, and maybe you, if you come, may be so inspired and empowered that you yourself can become a real leader in America to save the planet, because only if America moves will we be able to save the planet.
Well, thank you so much, Helen. I know you had to run a little early, and I hope that our listeners will try and make the show. We'll put this up on symposium. We'll put this up on Podbean through the PRN listing, and hopefully the website at PRN will be back up soon. So, again, Helen, you're always magnificent. It's always an honor to talk with you, and thanks so much for doing this conference and being on the show with us.
Thank you very much, and you're a great, noble person yourself, Harvey.
Well, thank you, Helen, and I see you soon. We'll go out and we'll go see a movie together. In addition to On the Beach, something a little happier, maybe.
All right. Okay, Harvey.
All right, thank you. So that's great Helen Caldicott. Thank you so much. Her symposium will be at the New York Academy of Medicine this weekend on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. $60 for the 2 days. An incredible lineup of speakers, including Noam Chomsky and so many others, on the issues of nuclear war and radioactive pollution and proliferation. We are still have a couple minutes left. I wanted to jump into a couple things. We are facing a major crisis in the United States nuclear power industry. These older reactors, five in the state of Illinois and another one in Ohio, another one in upstate New York, the GINNA reactor, they are all going bankrupt, basically, from too cheap to meter to too expensive to matter. And in each case, the utility companies are going to the states, trying to get bailouts, trying to get the ratepayers to subsidize these ridiculous crumbling reactors, which are essentially falling apart and which certainly cannot generate electricity economically, especially not in the face of the renewable energy revolution that is jumping ahead so rapidly. So our listeners in Ohio, especially in Ohio, New York State, and Illinois, we really have to jump on this situation. It's the Koch brothers and all the other billionaires who have invested in nuclear power telling us what cheap electricity it was going to produce are now gouging us to keep these very, very dangerous reactors continuing to operate. It's something that we all have to look at very closely and deal with in the short term. We are also very happy to read and to continue to read about great advances in battery technologies, technologies that will allow solar-powered homes to store electricity through the night and through the times when it's not quite so sunny. All this nonsense about how solar can't really do the job because, you know, what do you do when the sun doesn't shine? These batteries, I think, will really make the difference. They'll make the difference in solar cars, which we need more and more, certainly electric cars, and other technologies in terms of keeping factories open and storing the electricity that we need for our homes in the downtimes. So that is of great optimism. It's an optimistic development for a lot of us. Elon Musk is building what's called a super factory in Nevada to start to supply these batteries. And with those breakthroughs, I think we'll see the ability of individual homeowners to get off the grid. And this is something I think all Americans really crave, is the idea of being able to put solar panels on the house, have a battery to get you through the darker times, and then just unhook from that ungodly grid. And this is the terror that the nuclear industry and the utility industry as a whole is living through right now. Hopefully they will not survive it. The fact that the grid has become irrelevant, and that as people are able to put solar on their homes, on their rooftops, backed up with a great new generation of batteries, that we will not have to be plugged in to the electric power grid that continues to loop along with these ridiculous nuclear plants with coal and oil and the gas that comes from fracking. I will say, by the way, I did finally see Josh Fox's superb movie, Gasland. I watched it on Netflix, and anyone who has not seen Gasland about the fracking industry really needs to look at this film. There was another film on, an attack on Gasland. I can't remember. It was called Frack Nation. It was utterly ridiculous and just paper thin, just an utterly foolish attack on Gasland. Gasland is a really, really powerful piece of work. And I want to recommend it to everyone. As with Pete Seeger, this has been another hour of Flew By with the great Helen Hollercott. Join us next week. Fulpotopia, Power Mother Show. When the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
We bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, 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 Solartopia.